Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to The Powerful Patient. I'm Joyce Graff, and I'm really glad to have you here today. We're going to talk today about insurance, and that's very much top of mind for so many people because there are so many millions of people in the United States who don't have insurance. And even worse than that, there are people who are underinsured. They think they have insurance, and then they get sick and they find out that insurance isn't doing so great. So we're going to talk about that. The Powerful Patient is a show that talks about issues of interest to people with complex medical conditions or disabilities, and we help you learn how to manage your health, how to be proactive in taking care of your health, put together a medical team that's going to work for you, and manage that team, kind of like owning a baseball team. You know, you don't have to know how to bat, but you do have to know how to recruit the right talent to get the job done. Because after all, the winning this game is taking good care of your health for the rest of your life. This program is brought to you by the VHL Family Alliance, and VHL is a hereditary cancer syndrome. It's a genetic cancer syndrome, and it can occur in everybody. 20% of the people we're in touch with are the first person in their family ever to have this condition. So there are many different kinds of genetic conditions. This is one of them, and we deal with a complex medical condition every day. Let me play a little bit about VHL, and then we'll come back and talk with Nancy Metcalf from Consumer Reports on her findings in examining various kinds of insurance plans.
Von Hippel-Lindau disease, or VHL, is a genetic condition involving abnormal growth of tumors in some parts of the body. VHL occurs in every ethnic group worldwide. At this time, there's no cure, but research is helping those afflicted and their families learn how to manage their disease. When a family member has a tumor, it affects everyone in the family. VHL Alliance works to improve diagnosis, treatment, and the quality of life. Finding tumors early, getting the best treatment, and sharing information with others to help them cope is what VHL Alliance is all about. They're available to help lessen the stress of living with this lifetime chronic disease. Support the Cancer Research Fund of the VHL Alliance at VHL.org. That's Very Happy Life, VHL.org. 1-800-767-4-VHL.
Welcome back, and hi, I'd like to welcome our guest today. This is Nancy Metcalf, who is a senior program editor with Consumer Reports. Welcome, Nancy.
Well, happy to be with you.
Thanks. It's great to have you here. So you work with Consumer Reports, and Consumer Reports is an organization that will take a look at various product offerings in a given space and give us some advice as to what's good and what's bad about those. Is that more or less correct?
That's correct, and I hope that people know that this, and if they don't, we are an entirely nonprofit company. We do not take any free samples or any advertising from manufacturers or businesses, so we can be completely objective when we're evaluating products and services.
That's great. So you took a hard look at various kinds of insurance offerings recently. So tell us what you found.
I've actually been looking at health insurance now for over a year. We've covered published a number of articles about the American health insurance system. The most recent one, which was published a couple of months ago but is still available free of charge online, and I'll tell you in a minute how to get to that, is about what we call hazardous health plans, or less politely, junk insurance. A lot of people have it and don't know they have it. And the reason they don't know they have it is because they've been lucky enough not to get really sick and need it. It's really a ticking time bomb for a lot of people. And it all goes back to the fact that we know a lot more when we go to buy a car or a flat screen television or an air conditioner about the product we're buying than we do about health insurance. And the insurance company, the insurance industry, likes it just fine that way.
I recently turned 65, and I got...
Congratulations!
Thank you. I got about 6 inches of paper in the mail from various insurance companies trying to get me to purchase theirs, and it was so confusing. And I thought, you know, I consider myself a relatively savvy consumer and reader, objective reader of this kind of thing, and I am so confused. How does anybody ever make a decision about this stuff?
Well, and of course, I mean, if you think you're confused, think what you're like if you're buying. Think what it's like to be buying non-Medicare insurance. What you got flyers for was Medicare Advantage because,
right.
You know, 3 or 4 years ago, Congress changed the law to allow private insurers to basically take money. People on Medicare can now have the option, instead of getting plain good old Medicare that we've all understood for years, you can now take your Medicare money and get private insurance with it. Insurers love this program because it's very profitable for them, but it's very confusing for consumers. Many of them don't even know that's what they've bought. It's just hopelessly confusing, but it is nowhere near as difficult a market as the individual insurance market, because at least when you're buying private Medicare insurance, you're buying a policy that covers your medical needs pretty much, which is not necessary, because the government won't allow these private companies to sell private Medicare insurance that has big holes and gaps in it. That is not the case for insurance that below 65 individuals buy for themselves on the private market.
Right. Well, last year I was paying $750 a month for one person, and I'm thinking, you know, how do families manage to afford this, especially people who aren't making a whole bunch of money? Because
they don't. That's why we have 50 million uninsured people.
Yeah, it's outrageous. And as a matter of fact, while I was negotiating with you about the date here, I received in my fax machine 3 promos for 3 health insurance offerings, none of which, by the way, name the company in question, which automatically tells me this is junk. But it was really fascinating that I got 3 different offers just in that week.
These were through junk faxes?
Yeah, junk faxes, unsolicited things that came to my fax machine, new discount medical plans, $59 a month individual, $89 a month family. Now, looking at this from a perspective of $750 a month for one person and probably $1,500 for a family, this is like, woohoo, bargain of the century. But, of course, what does it include? And it, you know, it looks on the surface like this could be okay, but what kinds of things should people look for when they're trying to evaluate? Is this worth looking at, or is
trash? If you get, we've been getting calls on our home telephone line. I would say for the past couple of months, you know, they're the recorded, recorded calls that you sign up not to get but get anyway, and
telephone spam.
Yeah, there's telephone spam, and what they're marketing is, at last we have affordable insurance for you. It's only $3 a day or something like that. It's about $90 a month, and there's no pre that you know they'll take you no matter how unhealthy you are, and so on and so forth. Well, this sounds fabulous. So out of curiosity, I pressed to be brought through to an actual person.
Yeah,
and
right.
I was able to get out of them the name of the company, which I don't really remember at this point, but I actually was able to locate what I think was their website. And they, in fact, were selling dreadful, terrible insurance. But people don't know that. I mean, the problem with buying insurance is that we are trained to think that it's a really good thing to get a bargain. You know, mm-hmm. if we can buy that flat-screen TV for 30% less than our next-door neighbor, or if we can wait until a piece of clothing that we like goes on sale, or we can bargain down the price of a car, we feel very pleased with ourselves. And people believe, because they don't understand how insurance works, that insurance works the same way. I mean, I can't even, I have lost count of the number of people I have spoken to who got themselves into terrible trouble because, and the story is always the same. It's they needed to buy insurance on their own. Either they had lost their job, they had taken early retirement, they had decided to start their own business and didn't have access to group coverage, whatever. You know, they just graduated from college and they got kicked off of their parents' plan, so they needed health insurance. Mm-hmm. They went to a, you know, a name brand broker or a name brand company like Blue Cross, priced the insurance, and when they picked themselves up off the floor, said, "I can't. That's just outrageously expensive." Yeah. So then they start looking for cheaper insurance, and when they find it, they feel very pleased. They feel like they've really beaten the system. And most of the time, the people they buy the insurance from, this is story after story, says, this is great insurance, you know. It'll protect you against medical catastrophe. It's really good insurance. And incredibly, people who would never accept the word of a car salesman that it was a good car, will believe it. And they'll buy the stuff and feel like they've gotten a bargain. And, you know, if they never get sick, they may never know how bad the insurance is. But if they ever get sick, that's when they find out it's terrible. Because, you know, if you're a 40-year-old person and find insurance for $150 a month in most states, it's going to be bad insurance. It just is. There's no free lunch when it comes to insurance, and people don't understand that. And the companies that sell this junk insurance do everything they can to prevent you from understanding it.
So insurance, you mentioned it's not like buying a bargain dress.
No.
You know, that wedding dress marked down to $200 that was originally $2,000, that is, in fact, a bargain. But even if the seams split the first time you're out. but when you come to insurance, it's more of a gamble, isn't it? It's like they're betting that you're not going to get sick, and therefore they'll collect their $200 a month for 20 years.
Yes, and they know exactly what they know, particularly when you're applying as an individual, with except for people who live in a very few states, of which Massachusetts, by the way, is one, as you probably know.
Yes.
Massachusetts, New York, Vermont, New Jersey, and I'm forgetting one here, have what's called guarantee issue insurance, where insurance companies are not allowed to even ask you about your health care background, let alone charge you differently for it. But so put those states aside. Every place else in the United States, if you apply to buy insurance as an individual, you have to fill out a health history. And it is very detailed, and you really need to write every single thing down. And depending on your age and your health history, you might actually have to go and have blood tests. You might actually have to have a physical.
Right.
You know, you might have to produce medical records. The insurance companies don't want to sell insurance to sick people. I mean, think about what insurance is, and think about it. If you're buying it on your own, as opposed to getting it through your job, there's nobody to spread the risk to. It's just you. So, for example, I mean, we get letters and comments from people saying, you know, I don't know. This will be a typical one. I'm 50 years old and I have diabetes. And you know, usually it's been pretty good. Of course, I was in the hospital last year with a heart attack, but you know, most of the time I'm pretty healthy with it. And I can't get cheap insurance. I can't afford good insurance. And the person will say, I don't understand why our free enterprise system doesn't fix this. If somebody was willing to offer, was able to sell me really good insurance for $250 a month, I'd be happy to buy it. And why don't the insurance companies jump on this wonderful business opportunity.
Well, and well, the other side of that is that the insurance companies are worried that they're going to shell out more than $250.
Exactly.
In which case, it's a bad business bet for them.
A diabetic is a terrible business opportunity. As far as an insurance company is concerned, that's hundreds of thousands of dollars of claims likely to come down the pike. As one insurance underwriter said to me, you know, even if you've got a diabetic who has never been sick a day in their lives and, you know, takes wonderful care of themselves and eats right and exercises and controls their weight, it's a bad disease. And when diabetes goes bad, it goes really bad. You have to have stuff like kidney transplants and bypass surgery and leg amputations. So it is a condition that is uninsurable. And that's true of any condition that an insurance company can look at and say, this is going to cost us money. If you've got horrible arthritis in your knees, they're not going to give you insurance, or they're going to say, we'll insure all of you except for your knees.
Right.
Because what they're seeing is knee replacement down the road.
Right.
And insurance companies, if they were willing, insurance companies who sold $250 a month policies to middle-aged diabetics would be out of business in 6 months. No state would allow them to sell that kind of a policy, because in order to be legally allowed to sell insurance in a state, the insurance companies have to show that they're not going to go bankrupt. They've got to show that the premium income that they collect for that policy is going to cover the expenses. Because, you know, you don't want to be selling insurance to people and then when they go to collect it, find that the insurance company has gone bankrupt and can't pay the claims. So,
right. That's not going to do any of us any
right.
good.
And
so,
that's sort
so
of
we
fun.
Do need them to have a reasonable business plan, and they have to calculate the odds of what are the odds that we're going to have to pay out X amount of money.
Exactly.
And will we have it in the bank if that happens?
Exactly. And the people who buy insurance individually don't understand that. They simply don't understand it, especially people who have always been in group plans through a job, which is a completely different kettle of fish. I mean, if you work for a company with 1,000 people, that company is its own big insurance pool, you know?
Right.
And, somebody might get cancer in that company, but most of the people are probably going to be pretty healthy. And you can predict, actuaries who know a lot more math than I do can predict, you know, pretty accurately how much that company's expenses are going to be for their employees. But the individual market just doesn't work that way, and people don't understand it. They think they should be able to, you know, if they were contributing $250 to insurance, they think that that's how much they should still be able to spend buying it individually, forgetting that when they were working full-time, their company was contributing another $500 to it. You know?
Right. So first of all, your company is matching your contribution, and they're paying at least as much as you are.
Well, it depends on the company, yeah. But
usually. But for example, I used to work for Digital Equipment Corporation, which no longer exists. But when in its heyday, it had 155,000 employees in New England, and I remember we went through a big discussion about should they cover spouses with AIDS. And we had a big discussion about it. They went back and forth with their insurance company, and they decided they should because the pool was big enough and the impact was more or less like somebody having cancer. And because the pool was that big, it really didn't cause that many ripples in the pool.
Right, right. And a company that big that basically doesn't have health insurance. They don't buy health insurance in the sense that we think of insurance.
They're self-insure?
They're all self-insured. A company that big is self-insured. They basically just pay their members, their employees and dependents' health care bills. If you work for a big company like that, you might have a card that says Blue Cross or United Healthcare or Cigna.
Somebody's administering it.
The company has just signed a contract with that insurance company to administer the claims and to provide the provider network. you know,
uh-huh.
the doctors and so on and so forth.
Right,
but how that works is the company does that for a percentage of the employer's health care expenses. Again, it's not insurance in the way that we think of insurance.
Right, so the company is just paying the bills, basically, as
exactly.
they occur, rather than playing this betting
right.
game with some insurance company.
Right. Now, so a small company, a small employer, an office that has 15 people, like a doctor's office or something, or a small business
right.
that has 15 or 20 people, they're buying real insurance, just like individuals are. And a lot of the same
right.
problems apply to small employer, small business insurance, as applied to individuals.
Right. So then I went to work for a high-tech company, which, of course, had no retirement benefits, and people are all getting into this now. So when I retired, it was basically I checked myself out of the job, and I got to take care of my own insurance. So I created myself a little small business, and I went to the Small Business Association and said, may I join your pool? And they said, oh, sure. But it turns out that, and maybe you probably know this much better than I, the pools are the size of your little company. It's not the size of all of the companies added together.
Right.
The way they calculate it is how many folks are in your little company, 1 to 3, whatever, and they work it out on that. As a matter of fact, at one point I went to hire a 20-year-old, and if she and I were both in the same pool, we had to pay basically the average of the two of us.
Mm-hmm.
If she got insurance by herself, it was $240. If I had insurance by myself, it was $750. If the two of us were in the same pool, we were $500 apiece.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, well, that's good for me, but not very nice to her. So,
right, right.
So we didn't do that. But I just it mystifies me. Why
and
have a small business pool if, in fact, it doesn't create a pool?
Well, I'm a little out of my knowledge base here because I haven't written that much about small business, except that I do know that it's different, again, depending on the state that you're in.
Mm-hmm.
So, the whole idea of insurance pools is very mysterious to me. It's a very complicated thing that insurance companies manipulate to basically make sure that they're constantly churning over their insured population to get rid of sick people. It's almost an art, you know.
Weird.
Yeah, it's very complicated how it works. But
right.
The effect, all you need to know is that the effect of it is that if you get insurance and then after you have the insurance develop a health problem, the insurance companies can't cancel your policy. Let's talk about individual policy now. They can't cancel your policy as long as you're paying your premiums on time. It's against
right.
the law.
Right.
But they can raise your rates, and they will. And one of the ways that they but they really want you to just not have insurance with them anymore. And what they'll do is they'll say, okay, we have a – what they effectively do with their individual insureds is they'll – pull them all into a plan, you know, the affordable care plan, whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know, it'll have some really nice sounding name, the Healthy Lives Plan, you know, and
right.
there'll be, you know, the Healthy Lives Plan 500P, whatever,
yeah.
So that'll be a plan, and they'll start a new policy, and everybody who they sign up for that policy to start with is going to be healthy, because
right.
if they weren't healthy, they couldn't buy it. Okay, so this is a policy pool, and so they've got, you know, maybe 20,000-30,000 of these policies get sold, and initially everyone in them is healthy,
mm-hmm.
but then life happens. Somebody gets sick. Somebody has a baby. The baby has problems. Somebody gets in a accident, you know, and needs a lot of rehabilitation. Somebody has a stroke, whatever. People get sick. So now the costs of claims are going up. So what happens eventually is the people in that pool who are still healthy are saying, geez, this isn't that much of a bargain anymore. And they'll shop around. And so here comes this insurance company. Now they've got a new plan that they just started. So they'll take the healthy people and say, if you switch over to this new plan, you know, your premiums can go back down. But the but the unhealthy people can't switch.
Don't qualify for that.
Well, because they can't change plans. Because if
right.
they tried to switch into the cheaper, newer plan, they'd be turned down because they're now sick. So they're stuck in this other plan, and it's called a death spiral. Eventually, after enough time goes by, the only people left in the original plan are people who are so sick that they can't get out of it. And eventually, they either die or they can't afford it anymore, at which point the plan
it's
gone, you know. And,
right.
and they stop taking in new people into that plan. It's called they're closing a block of business. And it's a business plan, and it works
right.
pretty well. It works, in fact, it works very well. In one story I did last year, this is almost, you can't even believe it. This was a lawyer in Indiana who had bought a $50 a month plan from Prudential Insurance, for a major medical plan from Prudential, when he was, you know, probably in his mid-20s.
Yeah.
Back in the early 80s, fast forward to, you know, maybe 2005 or 2006, he never changed it. He had a small practice. He paid his
right.
premiums every month.
And
you know,
he's been paying premiums now for 26
yeah.
years.
Yeah, and he's getting
right.
older, and he's actually a pretty healthy guy. He's had a very successful law practice, but, you know, he's in his 50s now, and he's taking some cholesterol medication, and he's got a little high blood pressure, so he's taking a little high blood pressure medication, but you know, he's a healthy guy,
right?
You know, and he's physically active and everything is fine. But then, so by this time, his policy is up to like $1,000 a month, $1,200 a month. But he's making a lot of money as a lawyer. And he thinks, well, I'm paying it by myself. You know, health care is expensive. What are you going to do? Finally, a couple of years ago, he opens up his renewal. His premium is over $4,000 a month.
Oh, no.
And this got his attention. He said, you know, this is a little high. So he calls the insurance company. He says, can you get me in something cheaper? They said, absolutely not. We won't sell you any insurance at all. You take, you have high cholesterol and high blood pressure. We don't want you. And so then he calls the Indiana Insurance Department and says, can they do this? And they said, the insurance company department said, they most certainly can. There's only 500 people left in your, 600 people left in that original policy, which is like nothing, you know. And how much the premium is. It's completely legal rate filing. So at that point, he got out of it and got into the state of Indiana's assigned high-risk health pool, which fortunately they had and would take him. So
now, those of us who are in this system have an expectation that if we've been paying our premiums faithfully for 26 years and then we get sick, that's we haven't drawn anything much out of the bank in the last 26 years, so now's the reason that we bought the insurance policy for.
Yeah, well, let's hope your policy is good enough. I mean, you know, let's hope it hasn't just been sitting there with this depth charge in it the whole time, which I mean, there are so many ways that insurance can be really junky that it's really, I'm sure I don't know them all.
Right,
but I can,
and we always say read the fine print, but of course, most of us, of the people who rarely get sick, they may not even understand the language.
Well, here's two problems with the fine
policy.
Here's two problems with the fine print. First of all, the fine print is so impossible that, I mean, I know this because I've interacted with people who I've given bad policies to experts, lawyers and insurance experts to explain to me why the policy didn't pay for a certain thing. And they'll look at it and they'll say, you know what, we don't know. Or they'll say, well, we think we've figured out why this policy works the way it does. And it'll be like three different tiny little footnotes on three different sections of the policy that you have to somehow know to fit together, but that basically work to keep you from having your chemotherapy paid for. You know, it's basically impossible for lay people to understand that. And it, to make matters worse, in most states, you can't even see your insurance policy until you've bought it and paid for it. So they don't send you the big document with fine print in it until you're already insured. And you'll get, you know, you get usually about a 30-day buyer's remorse period where you could inspect it and say, I don't want it. But there's
right.
a couple problems with that. The first one is you don't know what you're looking at. And secondly, if you say, I don't want it, you don't have insurance. And you have to start all over again.
Right.
So that doesn't work too well. So the key is to be able, when you're shopping for insurance, to be able to spot at least the most egregious signs that it's going to be terrible insurance.
Right. And it's not just some fly-by-night company. You mentioned a couple of very reputable names. This Prudential policy you discussed a minute ago and in your article right up front is that there is a junk policy from AARP.
Well, it's actually a United Healthcare policy that was sold through AARP. But no, all of the big companies sell these
right,
policies.
But a lot of people trust names like AARP to
they
have
do.
Reviewed this plan and put their good housekeeping seal of approval on it.
And in fairness to them, once they got caught selling it, they stopped selling it. It's not for sale by them anymore.
Good. Okay. So that makes me feel better about AARP. But it just goes to show if they reviewed it and they didn't catch the problems in it, most of us don't have a clue how
to
catch problems.
Maybe the best thing to do right now would be to talk about some of the signs that you should look for if you're
definitely.
Now,
that would be great.
Okay. So the first one is if it's really cheaper than other insurance that you've priced, there's a reason for it, and it's your job to figure out what that reason is. And again, unless you live in New York or Massachusetts or these small number of states that have guaranteed issue insurance, if they say to you, "We'll sell this to you, and we don't need to have your health history," that in and of itself tells you it's junk insurance. Because no insurance company is going to sell you real insurance in a state that allows medical underwriting, which is what that process is called when they look at your health
right.
history and decide whether or not they're going to insure. No
it's
state that allows
bad business.
Yeah.
They
what
may
they're
be
going to
collecting
yeah.
your money and heading for the hills.
Yeah, not necessarily. They're not going to steal your money, but what they're going to do is they're going to sell you a policy. They know that. They've written the policy to completely and strictly limit how much they're going to have to pay out on it. One very common way is to have it be what's called an indemnity policy.
Mm-hmm.
These are very, very terrible policies, and people are taken in by them all the time.
What does that mean, an indemnity?
An indemnity policy means it pays a fixed amount for whatever, for a medical benefit, for example.
So if you have
it'll
a toenail or if you have a broken hip, they'll pay only a certain amount of money?
Well,
money?
Typically it'll be a hospitalization policy. They'll pay $1,000 a day. For,
which sounds like a lot of money
for
if
a hospital,
you start paying a hospital.
When you
bill.
Go in the hospital, and they will pay, and they'll pay it for 30 days. So, but then they'll say, but the way they'll sell it is we pay 100% of hospitalization, and then tiny little asterisk, tiny little print way inside, you know, the brochure.
Up to
policy limits. Well, $1,000 a day is nowhere near enough.
That's more
to pay
like
for,
a hotel charge at most.
It's a hotel,
hospital.
Yeah. If you just went to the hospital and just spent the night, you know, I mean, but the minute you have to have anything done to you in the hospital.
Like
you,
an aspirin, for example.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, if, like an operation, you know, medical
right.
care of any kind, just CAT scans, whatever. It's mm-hmm. it's nowhere near enough. Or they'll say, we'll pay for your hospitalization, but only starting the second day, which means that the first day you have to pay it on your own. And, of course, that's the expensive day. That's the day that you get the big emergency room bill and the MRI and the surgery and so on and
uh-huh.
so forth.
Okay.
So indemnity plans are terrible. Or they'll say, we'll pay the surgeon's fee for heart surgery will pay $2,500, when the actual surgeon's fee is more like $6,000 or $7,000.
They'll say operating room fee,
yeah,
and the
or
radiologist
they'll say,
and the anesthesiologist.
A lot of policies will say they'll cover our diagnostic tests only in connection with hospitalization. So in other words, a mammogram, a blood test, an X-ray, an MRI, anything that you might need done to you that isn't part of being in the hospital isn't covered. So that's obviously very problematic. The other thing they'll say is they'll just put a very low coverage limit on what they'll pay out. The article that I wrote, which, by the way, you can get to by going to our website, consumerreportshealth.org, click on the insurance tab, and then just give me a second. I'll tell you what to look for as soon as I unplug my machine here.
It's okay, and we can put it in the handout that goes with the show.
Yeah,
as well.
It's called Coverage Gaps Can Leave You in Big Trouble, buying your own insurance. It's the whole article on junk health insurance is there. It's free of charge. I do urge people to read through the whole thing, but you know, the couple that we led with who bought this policy through AARP, it was a hospitalization only policy, and it topped out at $50,000, which seemed like a lot to them. You know, they lived in a rural state, they'd never really had anything seriously wrong with them, they had no idea how much healthcare cost. The husband
It does feel like a lot, because maybe that's as much as your house is worth.
Right. The husband got colon cancer. And this was a policy that didn't cover the first day of hospitalization. So they owed money. I believe they owed money for his surgery because it was on the first day. But the bulk of his treatment, and the most expensive part by far, was his chemotherapy, which was all outpatient. And none of it was covered. Their total bill ended up being over $200,000, almost none of which was covered by the insurance policy.
Terrible.
So and they had absolutely no idea. That's another mistake that people make. They buy a policy that only covers hospital treatment, because when people think of something really expensive, that's what they think of. But oftentimes, especially with the newer kinds of cancer chemotherapy, outpatient treatment
to $100,000 a year.
Oh, very easily gets up to $50,000-$60,000 or more. Nowadays we have these especially for chronic illnesses like, you know, multiple sclerosis or rheumatoid arthritis, these autoimmune illnesses. We have these wonderful biologic drugs now that can really transform people's lives, but they cost $2,000 a month, $10,000 a month, and you're never anywhere near a hospital.
Right.
You know, you have to go to a doctor's office and have them infused. And if you have hospitalization-only coverage, it's not going to pay for that. Another thing they'll do is say we cover outpatient or doctor visits, but I've seen many policies that do this. We'll cover doctor visits for a year, up to $50 a visit. Which, you know, again, if you're buying insurance when you're healthy, that sounds like pretty adequate insurance. I mean, you know, I've been pretty healthy recently. I haven't gone to the doctor four times in the last year. I wouldn't. Mm-hmm. That would be plenty for me. But the thing that people also need to remember is, when you buy insurance, you're not buying insurance to cover you when you're healthy. You're buying insurance to cover you when you're sick. And you don't know
what will get you.
Yeah. And you don't know what might happen what might get you in the next year.
That's right.
You know,
I mean, there are some people who have conditions that they can predict might become a problem to them. And there are other people who go on a skiing trip and ski off the wrong side of the mountain. So,
you know,
I mean, you can be perfectly healthy and something can happen to you.
Yeah, and I mean, I have a dear friend who just found out he had prostate cancer. Now, this is a man who never smoked a day in his life, you know, is about the most physically fit individual I've ever seen. And he was completely gobsmacked by this. He said, I really thought if I took care of myself, I would never get sick. But he did get sick. You know, there's no guarantee, you know, and when I hear people say, you know, I don't really worry about it because I eat right and exercise, I want to wring their necks because they're living in a fool's paradise, you know.
Right.
I mean, you can eat right and get plenty of exercise and get multiple sclerosis tomorrow.
Right.
And have to have a $10,000 a month drug. There's no guarantee. And you don't want to be finding out when that happens that you have terrible insurance that's not going to cover it, you know, because you can't get covered retroactively. That's not
right.
The way it works.
Once you're sick, it's impossible to get insurance.
Once you are sick, it's impossible. Yeah.
Whereas, you know, when you're healthy is the time to think about it. And us creatures being who we are, we tend not to think about it when we're healthy.
Or you tend to it's a lot of wishful thinking. Yeah, I could get this cheap insurance, and the insurance agent said it's fine. I've heard a lot of people will say, I knew it had a high deductible. I mean, it's interesting. We've done focus groups of people who've bought their own insurance, and I'm sure the insurance companies know this also. Here's what people know about their insurance. They can tell you what their monthly premium is. They can tell you what the deductible is for the year, and they can tell you what their doctor and drug copays are.
Right.
That is it.
That's about it, right.
And they don't know anything else. And there's a lot of other stuff that they really need to know. And so, like drug company, insurance companies will do a lot of manipulating of sort of behind the scenes of policies to keep those premiums and copays and deductibles looking like they're low, even though behind the scenes it's a terribly expensive policy. It's like one thing that they'll often do is it won't have an annual out-of-pocket limit. In fact, when we've asked our people in focus groups, what's your annual out-of-pocket limit, they look at us like they have no idea what we're even talking about yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yet whether having one or not having one is the difference between going bankrupt and not going bankrupt.
Right.
Because an out-of-pocket limit says that once you've paid up to a certain amount in deductibles and copays and co-insurance, you know, that, you know, the $1,500 deductible and the $25
right.
copays for the doctor visits and the drugs and the 20% copay for surgery and whatever, you know, once you hit a certain dollar amount from all of that, after that, you don't have to pay. The insurance company picks up 100% of everything for the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of a good insurance policy will have like a $5,000 out-of-pocket limit. A bad insurance policy won't have any.
Mm-hmm.
So if you end up like being this guy that needs $200,000 of chemotherapy, you're on the hook for $40,000 because there's no limit to the amount of coinsurance that you can pay. And so, I mean, those are the little behind-the-scenes things that just really catch people up.
Well, here, for example, on one of these promotions that I got, it said $25,000 accident coverage. You know, that sounds good, but depending on how badly smashed up you are, that doesn't go very far. That might, as you say, pay for the first day or two in the hospital.
Well, that's an indemnity plan. You know,
uh-huh.
I mean, they've worked out the likelihood of people getting in an accident that cost $25,000, and they know that no matter how expensive the accident is, that's all the most they'd ever have to pay out. And I would bet you there's probably loopholes there too.
Right.
I'd have to see more of it. You know?
And here's another line item. It says $25,000 critical illness option. So in other words, if you take that option, you're going to pay more than this advertised amount per month, right?
Right. And again, it's an indemnity plan.
Yeah. So And again, if you get a critical illness, just as you just described, $25,000 doesn't go very far toward that chemotherapy bill.
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. In the article that is on our website, we actually priced out. We worked with a consultant who was able to price out how much certain critical illnesses really cost, and she priced out late stage colon cancer. You know, colon cancer that spread,
yeah.
Almost $300,000.
Mm-hmm.
A heart attack that starts with you have a heart attack, you go to the, you know, you take the ambulance to the emergency room, you have angioplasty right on the spot, and then you have to have bypass surgery, and you have to have cardiac rehab, and on, $110,000.
Mm-hmm.
Breast cancer, $104,000. I mean, these are expensive illnesses. You know, $25,000 critical illness coverage is nothing.
Nothing.
Right. Yeah. And I, as I say, I have to see the actual brochure. I bet that there's ways that it isn't really even $25,000, you know.
Yeah, probably so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't doubt it. Now, you say watch out for, quote, affordable, unquote, premiums. So,
right.
So anything that has the word affordable in it, you should be wary.
Yeah, and especially if you're like middle aged and have some chronic conditions, and they're offering to sell it to you without any asking about your health history. One thing that we've recommended a lot is to go to a website called ehealthinsurance.com,
right?
Which has health insurance, individual health insurance plans from all over the country. I mean, thousands of them.
Okay.
And so you go there and you tell them your date of birth, your gender. I think they want to know whether you smoke or not, what your zip code is. And they'll spit back to you all of the policies available to you. It's different from state to state. Insurance is all sold by state.
Right.
So, you know, that's why if you move to a new state, you have to get a different insurance policy. Some states it'll be hundreds, and others it'll be maybe five or six. It depends on the state. And what you want to do with those is you want to look for the most expensive one. And that's probably the only decent one. Seriously, it's probably the only really comprehensive plan that is going to be there. That's your benchmark, and that's the cheapest policy that's available to you. And then again, and even then, only if you are in perfect health, and in perfect health and can pass their medical underwriting. So anything that's significantly cheaper than that, your antenna should be up and say there's something gone wrong with this policy.
So traditionally, we've always said it's best to be in a large pool, but if you work for a big company, you're more likely to get good insurance at a reasonable rate.
Absolutely.
These days, though, a lot of companies are trying to negotiate those things down because they're becoming so outrageously expensive for the company that they're beginning to hit the company not just in the bottom line, but in their very viability. One of the big things for General Motors has been the cost of the healthcare plans for all their people.
Well, yeah, that's why there's such a big discussion going on about such a push for healthcare reform now, because,
right.
You know, particularly, interestingly enough, large employers are still hanging in there giving healthcare coverage to their employees. And they're actually even paying the same percent of premiums as they always have.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem of costs as they always have, but the problem is that healthcare costs have been going up for so many years at two or three times the rate of inflation or wage increase that even though the employees' percentage is held steady, it's typically about 25 or 30% of the actual cost of the policy is paid by the employee.
Mm-hmm.
That share is a lot more dollars now than it was 10 years ago, just because the overall cost of health care has gone up so much. And for small businesses, it's really been terrible. I mean, some of the most wrenching stories I've heard have been from small businessmen who just have to go through this hellacious experience every single year when it's time to renew their policy, because they'll think they found a decent policy for their employees, and then when they get their renewal, they'll say the insurance company wants a 30% increase in their premium. You know, and I mean, especially if one of their employees had the bad taste to get sick, you know, and have to have a bypass operation or have a premature baby or something.
Right.
So,
and that's just the very point at which an employer, a good employer, wants to be, you know, supportive and do everything they can, but all of a sudden, you know, to compensate them for the goodness that they're putting forward, they get hit with this extra bill.
They do, and it's always, I mean, what they've described is it's just these terrible choices they have to make, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes the choice they'll make is to make the deductible really big. You know, all of a sudden, instead of a $500 deductible, it's a $2,000 deductible. But, of course, when you have the deductible get to be that high, what you end up with is a lot of people, especially lower-paid employees,
mm-hmm.
are simply not going to get health care because they can't afford the deductible. You know, I mean, they theoretically have insurance, but they can't really access it. One of the worst stories I've ever heard is a woman who contacted us. She has junk insurance. She and her family live in Missouri, and they bought a really inadequate policy because it was all they could afford, and it had a huge high deductible on it. And she had a miscarriage and did not go to the doctor because they couldn't afford the deductible that she would have to pay. She just toughed out this miscarriage by herself in her house. I mean, isn't that a horrible story?
It is.
You know, and when I hear people who are against health care reform say, gee, we don't want to have rationing of health care here in our country, which, you know, I think of that woman.
There is rationing going on.
Oh, my God, is there ever? Yeah.
Yeah, and we're forcing it on people.
Yes.
In a very serious way, not realizing that we're doing it, but we are.
Yes.
Yeah. And when people do say, I have to go, you know, even if I can't afford it, I have to go to the emergency room, and they can't pay for that, then all of us wind up paying for it in increased taxes because there are federal programs that say emergency rooms can't turn people away.
Can I just say something about that? Because
sure.
There's a persistent myth out there that we actually have universal health care already because emergency rooms don't have to turn you away.
I just want to say
as strongly as
Please.
I can that that's complete myth. There's a law called EMTALA. It's an acronym for something or other that says if you're in an emergency room and somebody comes to you with an emergency condition, you know, their leg is broken in two or they're having a heart attack or whatever, you can't refuse to take them because they don't have insurance. You have to take them.
Right.
And you have to stabilize them. Mm-hmm. So that's true. But there's more to the story than that.
Yes.
The emergency room will send you a bill.
Uh-huh. Yes, that's true, too. But they can turn you away for things that are less than you're bleeding all over the floor.
Absolutely.
For example, I just talked with a family, coached them through a situation similar to this, where the guy had all the symptoms of a brain tumor. He has a history of a condition that involves brain tumors. We just knew it was a brain tumor. He goes to the emergency room. They give him medication for his migraine and send him home.
Well, it's not an emergency condition. It's not an emergent condition.
Right.
He's
even
not
though without surgery, he will probably die sometime in the next week. So, you know, he finally did get in somewhere. But that's the kind of thing. We do not have health care for all. We have sick care for many. We don't have health care for all people. And what we really need is health care. Something to sustain our health, something to catch things when they're early and not have to wait until it's an emergency scene.
Exactly. And that's what countries that have universal health care have that we don't have.
Right.
You know, and it's it's just kind of horrifying. And yes. I think a lot of people are still, a lot of people who are still lucky enough to have decent insurance are really in a state of denial about that.
Definitely. I agree with you completely. Most of the people I talk to who have good in health insurance simply do not understand that there is a problem.
Although I will tell you that there is nothing as indignant as a person who's always had good insurance
and
they're 57
doesn't.
Years old and they just got laid off and they have to buy their own insurance for the first time.
Yes.
And are they hopping mad when they find
right.
out what's going on out there?
It's suddenly in his face.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, right. We have one person in the queue here who may have a question. Mary Lou, do you have a question you wanted to ask?
Yeah, I'm still kind of confused. Hi there, this has been a great discussion. I'm kind of confused still about that small, like a small group, like say a small group of chiropractors or that would be under an umbrella.
So if it's a small group trying to get insurance,
yeah, mm-hmm. like,
and they're going in as a group of three to get insurance. Then,
what's your question?
Do you have any
questions? Well, I guess all right. If you worked for John Hancock years ago or the telephone company, that company bought the insurance and paid all the bills. If I
right,
understood you
they
correctly.
Basically just paid all the bills. They didn't even buy
right.
insurance. They just paid the bills.
Yeah,
right.
They paid the bills.
Right.
And but if I understood you right, if you were a small business person,
mm-hmm.
or you were an individual and you brought into, and there were only 15 to 20 people working in that office, then that's when I got kind of lost.
Well, then you're buying insurance. In other words, the insurance company is assuming the risk. It's just like if you were buying fire and, you know, homeowners insurance against your house catching on fire, or car insurance against getting an accident. The insurance company is assuming the risk, so they need to charge you a premium for your health insurance that is big enough to cover the expected expenses. And that's why they get so much information about the health of people who are buying individual or small group insurance. I mean, if you're an employer buying small group insurance for your employees, you have to tell the insurance company about the health history of those employees.
Of each person. And actually, yeah. the analogy with house insurance is a good one because, for example, they will charge more to insure a wood frame house than they would a brick house, or they'll charge you a little less if you have a sprinkler system
right.
or something
burglary
like that. So
right.
how much have you protected this edifice, and how much at risk is this building? Is it in an area where there tends to be a lot of arson, or is it in an area where there's really good response from the fire department? So all of those things go into it. Similarly with our health, they're trying to calculate the risk.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically betting how much money you're going to pay them as opposed to how much money they're going to pay out.
Right. They want to make enough money to pay the health bills. They call it, it's interesting, the insurance company's perspective. When they pay money out for the health care of their insured customers, that's called a medical loss. They consider that a loss, which I think is an interesting way of thinking about it, because you and I, who pay the premiums, don't consider our health care to be a loss.
Right. This is why we
but that's
it.
What insurance companies, so they need to
yeah.
cover their medical losses,
yeah.
they need to cover their marketing expenses, and they need to make a profit.
Yeah.
And the more profit they make, the better Wall Street likes it. So Wall Street wants them to be raising their profits every
right.
single year. And to do that, they have to raise premiums up and up and up. And you know, it's complicated because every state's insurance laws are a little bit different. So, and this is true for both the individual and the small group market. So, something that's true about small group insurance in Maryland might be completely different in Colorado. You know.
Right. We're down to the last minute, so let me just say that This has been a great discussion, Nancy, and thank you so much for being with us today.
I'd love to talk about this stuff. I'm a real wonk about this stuff.
That's great, and we will be sure to put the pointer to your information that's all over the web. It's excellent information.
Yes.
And if people go to powerfulpatient.org, they'll be able to find their way to it. It's at consumerreportshealth.org under insurance. And next week, we're going to have with us a wonderful nutritionist who's from California. Her name is Haley Pomeroy. She just spoke recently to the VHL annual meeting in California, so I can tell you right now, she has great ideas and very good practical advice for ways that you can support your health, support your immune system, and try to minimize the health impact of the environment that we live in and the food that we eat and so forth to lower our risk. But again, we're all at risk for an accident or a major illness, and we do need to have that insurance to cover us. And hopefully the country is going to come on to a true health care for all Americans in the next couple of years. It's not going to be an easy fix. It's not going to happen overnight, but hopefully we can all work together to support one another, because taking care of each other is terribly important. One way or another, it's going to cost us whether we do it or not, so it would be better if we did it right. Any other parting comments, Nancy?
Just be very careful when you're buying this insurance.
Yeah, and there are, in most states, there is an agency that might be able to provide you with some assistance in sorting through things like
that. Well, yes, I will say that if you have trouble, complain to your state insurance regulatory agency. They really need to know when people have problems, because oftentimes they don't. The only people they interact with are the insurance companies. So that's really the first place to go if you have problems.
Great. Well, thank you very much, and I hope we'll see everybody again next week to talk to Haley Pomeroy about nutrition to support your immune system. Thanks very much, everybody. Have a good week. Be well and be a powerful patient.